There we go. So today's Torah portion is Chaye Sarah. I'm going to sit here for a minute or two. I will have a stool at the new shul. So when I need to sit, I'll sit behind the bima. So still haven't figured out this problem. It's not blood pressure, and it's not blood sugar. But we'll get it figured out. It's probably med-related, but they can't figure out which meds. I don't know. We'll get it figured out. But in the meantime, I'm good. Except when I need to have a seat, I have a seat. So that's all right. So Chaye Sarah. Chaye Sarah, the lives of Sarah, right? So the parsha begins with Sarah's death. Of course, because it's named Chaye Sarah, right? But the story in the parsha is really about the finding of a wife for Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak's born, and last Torah portion, and now it's time to find him a wife. And so Sarah is sort of the impetus with this, the driving force. Avram sends his servant, who is not identified in the parsha. He's identified later as being Eliezer. But he sends his servant up to Haran to find Sarah a wife. Why? Yeah, Yitzchak, that one. So he sends his servant up to Haran to find Yitzchak a wife. And so the first question that occurs is why? Right? Avram doesn't want a wife for Yitzchak from among the Canaanite women. Right? They're pagans. You know, those Canaanite women. You know, they're from Los Angeles, Canaan. Who needs them? Right? And so Avram sends his servant up to Haran. So the first question that occurs is, wait a minute. Now I know that Avram came from Haran, but wasn't the problem the same in Haran? There's not pagans in Haran like there's pagans in Canaan. What's the difference? I mean, a pagan here, a pagan there, one potato, two potato. So what's the difference? Why go to Haran? Now, I know that Avram has family up there. Not necessarily good family, but family. So we want to kind of watch how the story plays out, keeping in mind this question. Why Haran? And so the servant goes up and has this incident that he talks with God about beforehand and says, be good to me. And if someone comes and says this and does this, then I'll know, you know, here's your sign. And then I'll know it's the right person. Then I'll know it's the right person for you to talk. And so he goes, and here comes the women that come to the well, and they're feeding, drawing water from the well. And if you want symbolism, there's lots. Midrash, the sages go on forever about women drawing water from the well. Okay, we don't have men drawing water from the well. We have women drawing water from the well. Why is that significant? Because, again, from the time of Sinai forward, we know that women spiritually are more advanced than men. They know to draw women from the well. Okay? And we get a grimace. Why do we get the grimace? Because it's not well taught that the women did not want to participate in the golden calf. They had to have their gold forcibly taken from them at Sinai. And it's clear in the Hebrew, it's not translated that way in English. Okay? So their gold is forcibly taken from them. Now the argument can be made, you always have to forcibly take gold from women. But that's a little sexist, so I won't go there. But it's understood by the sages that there one of the reasons that women don't have to do all of the commandments that men do is that men need the reminder. You know, we're, you know, here and now. And women are a little more spiritually minded. They don't need as many reminders. That's why they're not required to do all of the commandments that men are. Okay, so we have this situation. We got women drawing at the well. Why are they drawing at the well? Well, the pashat is, guess what? You need water. So they're drawing at the well. The darash is, aha. They're drawing from the mayim, achronim. Right? They're drawing from the latter waters of understanding. And among these, we've got Rivka. And she goes and says and does everything that the servant asked God for as a sign. So she does it all. So he gives her a nose ring, which is always, when you're dating somebody, the first gift you give them is a nose ring. No? Okay. Bracelets. Bracelets are good. We like bracelets. We like bracelets. Nose ring, not so much. And then Rivka's uncle Lavan comes into play. Lavan. Or if you're Ashkenazi, Lavan, right? And we know from later on, Lavan is not particularly a good guy. He's not particularly a good guy. So interesting that he really comes into play once there's money involved. But it's typical. We find out later, we don't really know at the time. And so, the servant says, come back with me to be Yitzchak's wife. And Rivka says, yeah, I'll go. There was little hesitancy. You know, I've been living here all my life. This is all the people I know. I don't want to be here. Let me out. And off she goes, right? Except Lavan says, let her stay here for a while. And we'll send her to you. Right, so the sages again speculate that there was going to be some extortion involved. And she says, no. Niet, lo, I'm out of here. I'm going. And so she goes back with him. And she gets back. And the first thing she does is she goes into Sarah's tent. Now remember, Sarah's dead. She is deceased. And the sages explain to us that a lot of things happened in her tent. The light was extinguished. There are things that happened in the tent when she passed away. So here comes Rivka. Rivka goes into the tent, and suddenly, miraculously, the light lights. The tent is made, right? Now, this is extremely symbolic to us. Because what it's telling us is that Rivka is continuing the legacy of Sarah. You know, good choice. She's continuing the legacy of Sarah. So, really what the entire portion is pointing to, and the reason that it's important to remember that the name of the Torah portion is Chaye Sarah, the lives of Sarah, is because this action of Rivka, when Rivka finally comes back to Avram's enclave, she goes into Sarah's tent. So it's really all about Sarah's legacy being continued. So I have to ask the question, what's Sarah's legacy? Right? Because that's what the Torah portion is about. This is what Rivka is perpetuating. What's Sarah's legacy? Right? Why were Avraham and Sarah, Avram and Sarai, sent to the land of the promise from Haran? Right? One long trip isn't enough. Now I got another one. From Haran to Eretz Canaan, the land of the promise. Avram was righteous. And we see this in Hebrews as well as in Bereshit, in Genesis. And we got to ask, because yes, Avram was righteous. Counted as righteous. Why? Well, let's look at Avram's behavior after this. Well, first off, he married his half-sister. That doesn't exactly count as righteousness. Right? Then he's going to go to Egypt and offer his wife up to the Pharaoh. Okay? Now, I would never... But Avram does this. Okay? He does lots of things in his life that are not righteous. Why is he counted as being righteous? And in this week, actually discover something about the nature of righteousness and how Hashem looks at righteousness. Hebrew tells us he's righteous because of his faith. And his faith brings out in Avram a lot of righteous acts. It doesn't mean that every act that he did was righteous. God looks at his actions, the righteous actions, right? And he doesn't so much look at the actions that are not righteous. He says the same thing in King David. King David did lots of righteous acts. And he did some that were euphemistically questionable. I don't think there's any question about them. Okay? But God looks at his... And the rest of his actions, God views through chesed, through grace. Right, we see God's grace through all of the Tanakh. So it's important to understand, both Avram and Sarah were considered righteous because of their faith and because of their righteous actions. Doesn't mean they're perfect. They did some things that were not. It's unimportant. Why? Because of God and his grace. So what were Avram and Sarah known for in Haran? The sages describe it as Avram's tent was open on all four sides. On all four sides. What does this mean? It means that anyone could come in to Avram's tent. Anybody in need, anybody in curiousness, anybody. And Avram would speak to him of God. Now, an integral part of this was Sarah. Because not only would Avram speak to them of God, but Sarah would open up the hospitality of the tent. Right? It was through Sarah that the people were fed in the tent, that Avram spoke to them about God. And it is this joint venture. Sarah opening the tent in hospitality and Avraham speaking to people about God and this connection between them that is Sarah's legacy. We even have a grocery store on the East Coast named Sarah's Tent. But why? Because Sarah's legacy is this hospitality about sharing God with people. Now we look at Matthew 28. We look at Matthew 28, the Great Commission. Make lots of officers. The Great Commission. And Yeshua tells the Talmidim, go. Make Talmidim, make students of all nations. Right? We tend to use the word disciples. Okay? Well, the word is really students. Yeah, disciples is a perfectly good translation, but it's a loaded word. What we're really talking about is students. Make the students of all nations. Doing what? Teaching them to follow all I have commanded you. Teaching them to follow the commandments. The commandments of God. Pretty simple. How are you going to do that? Just like Abraham and Sarah. The hospitality and the talking and the teaching. Hospitality and teaching. They go hand in hand. Right? What's... Yes, Wendy, it is your husband. It is your husband. Right? No, seriously. You open up your house every Friday night and you have all kinds of weird people come in and... And to talk about God, right?
He meets at Publix. Seriously, he invites him over.
So what you are bringing forth is the legacy of Sarah. Right? Because you put up with all that. Okay? And this is what it is. Yes, Beth helps. And this is Sarah's legacy. And this is what we look at. This is what's being passed to Rivka. And this is the significance of the Torah portion. Shabbat Shalom.